live righteously.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This is episode 84, wherein we visit with, Chris Clark. Christopher Clark. He's an actor and a theater director. He teaches at here in Utah. And he also is playing the Apostle Paul in the LDS Church's new films that they're doing, like seminary films and all that stuff. So I was going to get some follow-up from him, but he happens to be in Sicily right now. Tough life for Chris. All right. So coming up. Yeah, stay tuned for that in the second and third block. I wanted to share a couple emails that I've gotten in. I used to be really good about sharing every email that came in. I recently have not been so good about sharing the emails that come in. So here we go. This is from Margo. She says, I sanitized this email so that no names or places were included. This is from a letter from a missionary that was serving in Boston, or is serving in Boston, that was sent the day after the Boston Marathon bombings. She says, I sanitized it so that names or places could not be, determined, whatever. She says, his area is quite a ways from downtown Boston, and then I might reach out to his mom to talk to her a little bit about this whole thing. Here's the excerpt from the letter. Quote, I learned a great lesson this week. We all know of the terrible act of terrorism that happened yesterday at the finish line of the Boston Marathon. We know that it was an ugly and tragic event that took place yesterday. Now I'm going to rewind 1 year. Last year at this exact same time, I was still with my trainer actually watching the Boston Marathon right near the finish line. I remember scouting out the best place to watch the race from and even how to get there. It just so happens that the place that I had scouted out to watch the Boston Marathon from this year is one of the locations of the bomb. I had walked that very straight street last year and even stood right where the bomb was. It was a good spot. It was a way good spot to watch from, and I had planned to watch it from there this P-Day. This Sunday evening, we had plans to go as a zone to watch this event, and because I was the only one who had been there, I was the only one who knew how to get to that spot near the finish line. We were planning on going as a zone right where I had planned from last year. We had received permission to go to the temple that morning and then hang out in Boston the rest of that day. Sunday evening, I started to get this feeling that after the temple, we should come back to our area as a zone. I had no clue why. I even tried to ignore it and block it out. But the thought to come back after the temple kept getting slammed into my brain so hard that I knew that it could not be from me. By this time, it's Sunday at close to 8 p.m., and I knew that we needed to come straight home, but I had no clue why. So I started to try to talk to the elders in my zone to talk them out of it. Every single one of them wanted to go to the place that I had told them about. So in a sense, it was me trying to persuade my zone to come back with me after the temple. By 10:30 p.m., I had every single person in the zone convinced to not go. We went to the temple and had a great session. We all came back to our area as I had requested. Within a few hours of us being in our area, we heard about the bombs that went off near the finish line. I instantly knew why I had felt so impressed to keep us from going. At the dinner appointment that night, after the P-Day was over, a member showed me a 10-second clip of the bombing. As I saw where the bomb went off, I realized that it was the exact same place as I had scouted out last year to watch from, the place I had planned on taking us to. I realized that if we went, we would have been within 20 feet-ish of the blast from the bomb. Some of the zone may be even closer. Some of us could have died or would have been seriously injured and still in the hospital right now. I know that the Lord was watching out for me and the other elders in my zone. I learned that when we receive a prompting, even if it does not make any sense to us, we need to follow it. I'm going to do so much better from now on at recognizing a prompting and then acting on it. Thankfully, we were all here back in their respective areas and accounted for within the zone, and not a single person got hurt. Not a single missionary got hurt yesterday either, so the Lord truly does have his hand in every detail of the work. So thank you very much for getting that to us, Margo. I appreciate having that email. Another email that came in, this is from Emily. She's suggesting some people that we should have here on the podcast. Says, I thought of some of the people that you should interview, and here they are. They'd be awesome. First, the crew from Studio C. That would be awesome. 2 exclamation points. That's a show that's on BYU TV. Then I think that you should get Todd Hansen from BYU Story Trek. That's also on BYU TV. Heck, you should get Liz Edmonds from The Food Nanny whilst you are at it. It's also, I believe, from BYU TV. You know what? Or the whole of BYU TV, says Emily Hunsaker. That sounds good. So thank you, Emily, for your email. I got this email from, Vonda Barris. I thought you'd like to see this article about the church's reaction to the Boy Scouts of America. It's about doing an interview, and she also recommends doing an interview with Aaron McBride of Roanoke, Virginia, one of the co-editors of Meridian Magazine, where we actually get a few of our articles of news every week. She writes great stuff, fiction and nonfiction, and we'll include this article in next week. In next week's articles of news. So Aaron McBride, that's a suggestion. I love that. Also, this email from Josh Weber says, "Hey there, you guys are doing great. I contacted you several months ago expressing interest in having a more in-depth discussion regarding missionaries who return home more than once. I just wanted to say that I'm still very, very interested and would love to meet with you sometime soon. Please let me know when you get a chance, Josh." All right, Josh, we're doing it. It's coming. I promise. I haven't forgotten about you. And we got this email. This is from Diego. It says, "Hello, Cultural Hall. My mom told me that your program is great. She loves listening to your stories. She listens from Honduras. I am a BYU student from Honduras studying economics. My mom convinced me to tell you about my friend who is also from Honduras and a fresh graduated BYU student. He came to BYU with the resolution of becoming a doctor. He came from Honduras to BYU Idaho first and then transferred to BYU Provo. He excelled in all his classes, including a minor in Hebrew. By this time, he has already been accepted to good medical schools, including Northwestern and Vanderbilt. He is also on the wait list of Johns Hopkins Medical School and University of Pennsylvania Medical School. Now, my friend is also tutoring other pre-med students on how to do well on the MCAT. I think it's a nice story. Let me know if you're interested in telling the story. I can talk to my friend if you need me to. Diego." Diego, we'll be getting in touch with you as well. So we get lots of emails. We always love and appreciate people who will send us suggestions for people that we should visit with in the Cultural Hall. And we get to, as much as we can, as best we can. There's other emails too, where people will recommend articles of news stories. You can always send those to richie@theculturalhall.com. We appreciate you guys listening. Make sure that you find us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. You can follow us on Facebook. It's just facebook.com/TheCulturalHall. And if you like what you hear, you can tell your friends about it. We'd love for you to do that. Let them know that you like listening to The Cultural Hall, and maybe we'll bring more people to hear this great podcast, this great show. Also, you can write a review on iTunes. If that's the way you get it, just drop a couple lines and say how you feel about it. Doesn't have to be a testimony. No story-mony necessary. Just go to iTunes, and then when you're waiting for your episode to download, just go ahead and say a few nice things. We'd appreciate it. All right? Suggestions. Listen, we want this to be what you want, so we can't know what you want unless you get in touch with us. You know what I also forgot? We're on Pinterest. If you do the Pinterest thing, you can follow The Cultural Hall on Pinterest and pin things. Pin things that we like and suggest pins for us, okay? All right, let's get into it. We're going to do the second and third block here of The Cultural Hall. We're visiting with Chris Clark. Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to TheCulturalHall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in The Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast.
Time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. This is going to be awesome. With a spit take from Molly Mormon and a half-drunk jar of Diet Coke from Christopher Clark, you know you're in for a good time. It's coming from the Old Town Grill on the corner of 300 West and Center Street in downtown Provo.
Do yourself a favor. Get down here and eat something.
Have you been eating here before,
No,
Chris?
No. You know, my students come here. It's like a big hop-and dance hub. And so I've always been scared to come in here.
Yeah, to see the students. I'm just here. Okay, I'm here hanging out too. What's up, students? Yeah, they have the most delicious burger that I've had. They also have that we both contemplated the grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah. It's, why didn't we get it?
I don't know. Because I can't eat anything after that burger. It was so good. Mm-hmm. But it was like, it's just, you know, a grilled cheese sandwich on really fresh homemade sourdough bread. And then it was like a spicy... sour cream,
Spicy sour cream.
Unbelievable. But I didn't do it. I got a burger that I'm going to have to run on the treadmill for 7 hours tonight to work off.
But when you come to the new Provo City Center,
Temple. That's what I prefer.
Yeah, Tabernacle.
Tabernacle.
Tabernacle is what I like to call it. And when you do that, then come here afterwards.
Yeah, walk over. Because you know that thing will have an open house for a month.
Yeah.
Because all the people want to go through.
Yep. So park over at the liquor store. Walk through the Tabernacle.
Park at the liquor store.
It's good parking. No one's parking there.
Yeah, not here in Provo.
Yeah. And then walk over here to the Old Town Grill on the corner of Center Street and 300 West for lunch.
Do yourself a favor. So delicious. Mm-hmm. Christopher Clark.
Yes.
You're here.
Yeah, here I am.
That's a thing. Yeah. Here in the second and third block. Yeah, we invited you. I did Zumba with your wife earlier, so that's what I know about you.
Yeah,
that's
the best thing to know about me is my wife.
That's what she said. She said you're meeting
the best thing
now.
I got going.
You'll get to know more things about him later, but right here, that's the smartest thing he's ever done.
It pretty much is.
This lady right here.
Yeah.
Tell me about yourself. Let's get into it. You teach. You already alluded to that.
I teach, I teach at UVU,
okay.
Utah Valley University.
Which I
know,
begrudgingly have said before, or not begrudgingly, actually pretty openly said, BYU almost, or you couldn't quite get there.
Harvard on the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a huge school now, bigger than BYU,
isn't it? Bigger
than
BYU,
I
have to say, you know, I've been teaching there I've been teaching there full time since 2006, but before that, I was there for 2-3 years as an adjunct, as a part timer. Mm-hmm. And the growth that I've seen in that, 8 years is enormous. I can't even, it's not even the same school remotely as it was when I first started there.
It used to be
UVSC. Make it sound like it's because of me.
I got there in 2006.
It seems like ever since I've been there, it became amazing. Yeah. It's the most awesome place now. It was UVSC, but it was UVCC before that.
Yeah, that's
and then
before
it was
thing.
Like fix a flat university, you know, like, and now it's the real deal. It's a really great school. Mm-hmm.
With all sorts of great degrees. They even have mm-hmm. several master's degrees.
They do now, yeah.
Yeah. And all still headed, is it Elder Holland's son, mm-hmm. Matthew?
Matthew
that's
Holland.
President of the school.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Future guest here on the Cultural Hall. I'm calling you out,
awesome.
Elder Holland Jr.
President Holland.
President Holland.
Boss.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah, right.
You know, one day. Because that's how he's going to do it. He'll be like, Samuelson, you look tired.
Oh,
let me just scooch on over across town. And people will be like, no, you took our president. Then he'll be like, that's fine. I'm going to the 70s.
So he's just stepping up.
Yeah, just stepping up. Yeah. He's aspiring to the velvet chairs. It's cool.
Sure.
I'd love to have him be there. I've met Matthew Holland, the president of UVSC. A nicer guy, honestly, you couldn't meet.
But have you met Matthew Holland, the president of UVU?
Is he not the nicest guy?
Because we don't say UVSC anymore.
You said UVSC.
Oh, UVSC.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We don't say that anymore.
I'm sorry. That was old timey, man.
I know. This is why we gotta have change.
We're gonna work through the repentance.
We're gonna enact some change.
We're no longer park at Walmart and walk university.
But you teach theater, right?
I do. I teach acting. Actually, I'm the chair of the department
now,
so yes. I don't get to teach almost at all anymore, which is sort of sad. I miss that, but I did for a long time. Was over the acting program at UVU.
Why'd you get into acting, into theater?
You know, it was a weird.
Because you're never going to make money with it, Chris.
Correct.
You're not. What are you going to do?
Not making money.
That theater thing that you're playing with, that's fine for now. But what are you going to do when you get older?
Yeah, this is the thing. Actually, you know, my parents never said that to me, and my parents were not that they were not supportive or supportive. They just were ignorive and sort of just let me
neutral.
They'll
figure it out.
Just sort of let me fall into this, and I think they were always really excited. Because growing up, you know, I was such a oddball in my family. There's 9 kids in my family, and
oh my gosh,
yeah.
Oh, well, so
we're Mormon. Mormon. You know that. You know this, that was the 70s model. Is you know you'd have these, you know, 12 to 15 kids. I mean, we shirked at 9. But anyway, yeah, I was in the middle of 9 kids, and all my brothers were really athletic, and my sisters were, you know, everyone just kind of. I don't mean to say they're all the same, but I just kind of came along, and I had these sort of artistic inclinations, and
boys,
my parents were
boys
like,
playing with clay again,
yeah,
sweetheart. What are we? He ain't playing ball. He's playing with clay. What are we gonna do with it? I'm gonna ignore him.
Yeah, and that is basically my childhood right there. That little play you did. Except no clay. We could never have clay.
You played the piano.
I did play the piano. Yeah, poked around on the piano.
But what it was though? Okay, kind of that. You didn't fit in the mold of what all the brothers and sisters fit into.
Yeah. But I never felt like, you know, I never felt that I was punished or anything for that. I always felt like I was very supported, and, you know. But it was a weird way, I think, to grow up in that family. When I was in high school, I did a couple plays. I didn't do a ton of plays, but I did do a couple. And my senior year, I'm giving you the long story here. You can just edit this.
No,
let's
do it. This would be great.
My senior year in high school,
try it.
I tried out for the King and I. Uh-huh. And I got cast as the king. I remember we had to take off our shirts at the audition. It was a big deal. We had to take our shirts off and be shirtless. That was like part of the gig. You had to be ripped or something. And at that time, apparently, I was. I don't know if that's why I got the part. But anyway.
Let's see if you could do the part now. Shirt off. Let's go.
Yeah,
right. What in the?
Yeah. Still got it. Click, click, click.
Why is he wearing a rug? Is that your bathroom? So you made it as the part of the king.
So anyway, because of that, a professor from BYU, Charles Metten, came and saw the show and offered me a scholarship afterward. And I had never thought about going into theater at all. Huh. But because he gave me the scholarship to get into BYU, I took it. Because I wasn't going to get into BYU because my grades were not great. And I was taking classes like bowling and, you know, clothing for boys and student government and just like anything that didn't require anything. And I wasn't going to get into BYU, and suddenly I got in. So I went in. I was a theater scholarship and just kind of thought I would ride that out. And I went on my mission, came back.
Finland.
Helsinki, Finland.
Nice. And would you get done? Did you say, I'm finished?
No, that's the first time I've heard that joke.
Stupid.
Ever.
So you get home.
So I came home.
Man, I wish I wouldn't have done.
And can you just go back a little? Just a couple clicks?
Yeah.
So I
finished my mission. I'm helping you out here. Okay. So I finished.
I'm not going to ask where you served.
And then, yeah. And then, anyway, on my mission, I just decided I was going to come home and be an English major because that was going to make me so much more money.
That will do it.
Yeah. So I did that, and that's, you know. So I didn't actually graduate. It's funny because I teach acting, but I have no degrees in it. I have a bachelor's in English, and I have a master's in directing, and I have a PhD in theater education, but I don't have any acting degrees. But I was teaching acting for a long time. So really, I just admitted to you that I am not qualified for my job.
Your students knew it anyway.
They could tell. They were on to me.
This guy? Stannis who?
Stannis who?
Wait, I don't know.
Stannis Krabsky, more like it.
This is so inside for theater people. Everyone else is going.
I'm sorry. I'm impressed that you know any of this, though. That's great.
Are you a theater major?
Well, there
theater
you go. Major. Yeah. Where were you a theater major?
Southern Utah University, where Chuck Metten was my dean.
Of course. Let's turn these off and really talk.
Yeah, we're already connected. You know, I bring it up as a joke, but I think for a lot of people, I guess this is where this interview will go. For a lot of people, they go, man, you know what my passion is? Is theater, or my passion is dance, or my passion is drawing and painting. Yeah. But there's no way I can ever make a career out of it, and I need to be able to support a family because that's the gospel way.
Mm-hmm. Well, not with that attitude.
But, I mean, there's a lot of people that go, yeah, it's the real. I'm just being realistic. I'm not being pessimistic. I'm just look at the statistics on these people, and there's no way that I can do it. Yeah. And that to me makes me really sad when I talk to people.
Yeah.
So how do we get past it?
Well, it's hard. I mean, we have to change the way we look at all of this. First of all, we have to create our own opportunities, and that's why someone like Jeff Parkin is so important, or people like that are doing professional work locally, because we need to create some of our own opportunities. But I think we also, as parents, we need to, when we see our children are, you know, showing signs of artistic disorders, you know, that they want to do this, we need to be a little more open to that and a little more encouraging and letting them know that it is possible. It is possible, but they're going to have to work really hard. Mm-hmm. And they're also going to have to be good at it. And that's kind of part of the problem, too, is that there are a lot of people that I see, you know, that are students that they would love to do theater. They would love to, you know, be a professional dancer or something, but they don't have the talent for it. And that's hard. It's an awkward thing to talk about. And so I think at some point you have to really decide how bad do I want this and do I have the skill set for it?
That seems like a difficult self-conversation.
And it is. And really, to be honest with you, sorry.
I was just going to ask, is it possible where talent is lacking to make up for it with work?
Sure. I think for me, to succeed as an actor, you need, if you want to succeed as an actor in the real world, you need three things. You need a look, which isn't necessarily good looking, although that is a look, but a very specific look is important.
Like a cardigan and a kind of balding, male kinda, pattern baldness.
That's a great look.
Ray-Bans with a beard.
They're not actually Ray-Bans. Oh. I had some of those, but they...
Oh, I wasn't talking about you.
Well, no, that's the look I'm going for, though. See, if I could get that, if I could nail that look, I'd get all kinds of work.
There it is. It's because they're not Ray-Bans.
Because they're not Ray-Ban. These are actually like way more expensive.
Oh, I'm sure yeah. they are.
Now I forgot what I was saying.
You have to have a look.
You have to have a look, and you have to have work ethic. You have to be able to work, and you have to have talent. You have to have all three of those, and you can have different levels of all three, but you have to have all three if you're gonna make it. And so part of my job is having that awkward conversation with people.
Have you and had so, it, that
oh,
conversation?
Yeah,
before?
every semester is what I do. Sit down with students and say, "You don't work hard enough. You don't. If you want to succeed, you're going to have to work a lot harder than this. This is going to have to be the only thing you want to do. Hmm. Otherwise, keep it as a hobby. It's a great hobby. There's a lot of community theater. But if you want to succeed as an actor in theater or in film, it has to be the only thing you can do. It's the only thing that you love and can think about. And if it's not, and there's anything else you can do, we encourage you to do it because you'll probably be a little happier." It's a career full of rejection. Now, if you are the sort of person that's all you can think about and that's all you want, then and you're willing to work for it, then you'll succeed. But it's hard, you know, because every year at UVU we have this giant business fair where all these businesses come recruiting, setting up booths, looking for business majors, and we don't get that with in the arts. No one comes recruiting us. And so they have to learn how to make their own way. So we're really trying to train our students to be proactive and productive and professional and all these other P words so that they get out there and make their lives, what they want.
But isn't that the case with anything, really?
Absolutely.
I mean...
But I think that with arts, with artists, we sort of expect things to land in our lap. Mm-hmm. And they don't, usually.
Ever.
Ever. Oh,
tell your friends to listen to this podcast, please. Tell them. Man, that must be...
Yeah, it's horrible. And I've, there's been...
a hard conversation
It
to
is,
have.
And you try to do it with love and kindness.
I'm going
to
break your dream right now. But, yeah. And then I bet you... Have you had the experience where they... Like you always see on TV where they come back, 10 years ago, you told me I would never be, and now I'm coming back.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Stick it to you.
And that... Have you had any of that?
No, and I would love to.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I would love to. I'd love for that to happen because I would just think, well, great. We helped you. We created an obstacle that you had to get over, and look at you now. Yeah. Good for you. And I would probably cry and apologize to help them realize this exciting dream they had of coming back and sticking it to me. But I would, in reality, be really happy for them.
What did... Molly and I were talking, not here on the podcast, about Mormon folk and talented Mormon folk and how we maybe... I tend to think we have a little bit of a leg up, maybe.
For sure. You mean in terms of talent?
In terms of talent. Is that snobby? Is that snobbery for me to say that?
No, but you see it everywhere. When I graduated from school... I just sort of figured that the my friends and people I had worked with were talented, but that when I went out in the real world, I would meet real talent.
Yeah, kind of. I get that.
And you go out there and you're like, wait a minute, these people aren't very good. I mean, the people that I worked with at BYU were fantastic compared to what I saw even at graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I went out of the country for graduate school. And
where'd you go?
I went to a school called Exeter in England.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, right? Right here. Cheery hoppo.
I'm studying the works of Shakespeare.
He's a Shakespeare expert. Yeah. Yeah. He really is.
So let's not talk about that.
Why? You're not a fan of Shakespeare?
No, I am. I just feel such a jerk talking about it.
What, pretentious?
A little bit, yeah.
A little, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing for me.
You're an SUU guy. You got Shakespeare
but
all over.
Here's the thing, because people come after me as far as this goes. This isn't about me, so I'll only share this, and then we can talk about this another time. But Shakespeare, for me, I love to watch it, and I think it's fascinating to read and to study it, but as a performer, I just couldn't get it.
Here's one. Can I brag about something that you do?
Oh, please.
Super.
Brag about me.
One really cool thing that Chris does is he takes Shakespeare's work and makes it accessible to children. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, I have done. it's been a couple years since I've done it, but,
it's great.
The way that Shakespeare was written was so different than the way it's performed today. Yeah. And I think that's part of the problem maybe for you, why you didn't connect with it so much, is that we create this fourth wall with it, and it becomes very internal, and I'm having this moment up here and I'm crying and speaking this language, and it becomes about me, me, me. But it was never written that way. It was meant to be very much a communal experience with the audience. And so the actors and audience were all together, and you're looking at them and you're talking at them, and you're pulling them up on stage. And it's like we're doing this thing together. And I don't know, I can't compare it to anything we have today except for maybe a sporting event. You know, basketball players might look at the audience and, you know, or football players, you know,
yeah, get
do
into
little
it.
Dances
Come on, yeah.
in the field, in the end zone. And, you know, and that's how those plays were. And so the thing is with kids, they're so anxious and ready to love what you're going to give them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you open up to them and you make this really fun and exciting and clear to them, they're the best audience you'll ever have. And they're also the hardest audience, because when they get bored, they let you know.
Yeah,
they
I'm
don't just
bored.
Quietly go to sleep. They'll say they're bored, yeah. or they'll jump up and down, or just stop watching or talk to their friend or whatever. So, but I think it's really yeah. great. Like yeah. I love that. I love the fact that, you know, part of the problem that we have as adults is that we've been somehow, somewhere along the line, we got the message that it's boring.
Well, you know? Yeah. I think the stigma is Shakespeare.
Yonzers.
Yeah, you can go to that, sweetheart, and then take the ballet, and yeah. then, you know, you can come back to me. Catch an opera so I don't have to do that with you as well. We'll talk when the football game gets over.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to be that way. I think if we were doing it right, if we were performing it right, people would be clamoring to see it. I just don't think we are.
I want to come back in the third block, and I want to talk about what the church was like in England, being a States guy going over across the pond.
Sounds good.
Phrase. And some other things here. Coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, joined by Chris Clark. That's right. I want to call you Christopher, but
no,
I'm
call me Chris.
No, we'll call you Chris. We're
call
pals.
Me Chris. That's what we do.
Well, brother.
That's what pals do.
What's up? We're shaking, brother Chris. Woo, hands on the inside there. You didn't answer my question. I asked you a question, and you didn't answer it.
Because it did make me feel like a snob a little bit, but I also just talked about other stuff. Your question was about... Restate your question.
We have a lot of talented people here within the church, I think.
Yes, we do.
And I think more so. I think it's biased. I think God gave a little more, sprinkled a little more.
Well,
within. Maybe?
No, I don't. Well, maybe. But I think also parents. I think parents do a good job of pushing the arts. I mean, how many kids do you know here that have to take piano lessons or violin lessons or whatever? I mean,
and not even exclusively here, because, you know, people that listen to this are all
people,
over, but
yeah.
LDS people in general say these things are important and kind of encourage.
We have more theaters in Utah per capita than they do anywhere else in the country.
Take that, the rest of the country.
Serious. Yeah, it's our deal. I don't know. We have an appreciation for the arts, and I think the church recognizes the arts, which is really great. We used to do church plays, and we don't really do that stuff anymore.
Road shows?
Yeah, but I'm not mourning the loss of those, but we did
Why
used
not?
To do more of them. Why not?
For a lot of people, I think that was an introduction to, hey, I'm going to try this, and
yeah.
I kind of like this.
I think the
and
reason
there used
why,
to be a competition with those things.
That was part of the problem,
thing.
Though,
was
wasn't
problem.
It? Because yeah. I think art competitions are difficult anyway. Because how do you... I don't know how you can be creative when you're under the gun like that.
Yeah.
But that's just me. I'm a little soft and feely.
That's from Exeter.
That's something I picked up at Exeter.
Something
just
I
a
learned.
Little something I picked up over the pond.
Crossed the pond. When I was thinking about the words of Bill, I call him Bill. You're not allowed to.
I think the other reason why I don't mourn the loss of road shows is I would be afraid that if we had them again, that I would always have to direct them.
Right.
you know. And you would. And so I would, yeah, for sure.
Well, he does. You do that.
That's what you do for a living. You should do our road show, and the theme is, you know, I don't know, go tell it on the mountain.
Yeah, something like, ridiculously hard to cram into a road show. Okay, so we'll have a mountain.
You know, I was thinking about it the other day. That I was thinking that if I were asked to do a road show, I would do it really abstract, and I would make it super artsy, and there would be someone playing the cello and like
weird
puppets, and it would be like super artsy, and people would be so baffled by it, and I would be thrilled.
People walk
there
away.
Wouldn't be any like golden age musical songs in there, no fake wigs, no none of that business. It would just be like movement. And
see,
like black tights,
you'd call
and
it liquid
flashing lights on command.
I'd one up you and just have it be a bare stage.
Oh, even better.
For 10 minutes and let everyone be alone with their thoughts.
It's like a Beckett piece or something.
Hmm. Oh, I get what he's saying. We're nothing. There's an absence of anything without God. Great. Go tell that on the mountain.
Yeah. Road show. And you would get the last prize. Yes. You would get the worst prize.
We gave it to the guy.
There was no confetti machine.
We gave it to the guy. The Wigs in Oklahoma rendition. Yeah. We're nerding out. Everyone is listening to this going, great, Richie found a theater friend, and now... Mormons talented, we talked about that.
Yeah, I think the Mormons are talented. I mean, but I think we encourage it.
Do you think that, like, testimony, anything like that, bearing your testimony, teaching classes, having to talk in church, has something to do with it?
I think that has something to do with our ability to get up in front of people.
To perform.
Yeah, you know, my daughter gave a scripture in church. She's 4 last week, and I was thinking about that, man, you know, how many 4-year-olds around the world are getting in front of congregations, and, you know. So I think that's part of it. And I think part of it is, you know, in our church, we do everything. And so on Sundays, when it comes time for a musical piece, it's one of us.
Yeah.
You know, we don't bring a band in, or we don't, you know, we don't have the same people doing it every Sunday. Well, some words do, but you know what I mean? It's us. It's on us to do all this stuff. So,
you know, we were talking about making a living and doing, you know, pursuing arts and kind of those dreams thing. And I think one thing that you didn't hit on that I think is a big part of it, too, is I think you just change expectations if that's what you want to do. If what you want to do is be an artist in whatever form or creation that is, well, then maybe you expect to not expect having a huge, you know, expensive house or, you know, really nice cars, but to have that fulfilling career of this is what I do, this thing I love, but I'm not going to be that other thing.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things that for me isn't a struggle, but I always thought it was kind of a joke on TV when it's like people are trying to keep up with their neighbors and doing that stuff. I never thought that was a reality, but it absolutely
is. It is, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that I'm a great example of it because I chose a path of stability, you know, not initially, because initially I took all kinds of risks when I had little kids, but now I've got 5 kids and my oldest is 14, and I'm not at a point now where I can have a risky career. Mm-hmm. So I chose something that was stable. I'm still in the arts, but I have a job where I get a paycheck every 2 weeks, and that's called, you know, academia. So I think people could look at me as a bit of a sellout, really, because I'm not out there pounding the pavement to get directing jobs. I get the directing jobs I can when I can, and I still work quite a bit. But that was important to me, that if I was going to have a family, I was going to provide for the family, and I was going to do it in a way that I felt still fulfilled my creative needs, and I feel like this does.
Do you have any regrets about it?
I regret having so many kids.
No, I'm just kidding. Number 4 and number 5. Well, I'm talking to you, 4
and the
5.
Ones in the middle I could lose. No, that's not true.
I love you, sweetie.
I don't know that I have any regrets. You know what? I do and I don't. I regret that I didn't graduate in theater. But I don't regret it because that is how I met my wife. And I kind of think that was why I needed to switch majors, is so I could meet my wife. But
she also an English
major? She was the best
major?
Thing that came. She was an English major.
And you should mention how you met.
We met kind of in theater, because at BYU, they used to do it. I don't know if they still do, but the English majors every year would put on a play. They would take a book and they would adapt it in a play.
Oh, jeez.
And
did that go well?
Well, I'm sure they were horrible. I don't remember seeing any other ones. But the year that I was in it, it was they picked the Bible. They picked the Old Testament.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
It's a nice children's book.
So I auditioned. It was like right after my mission. I auditioned for it, and I got cast as the devil, of course.
Yeah.
And my wife was a chicken on Noah's Ark.
Of course.
So the devil and the chicken.
Oh, my gosh.
Love was in the air.
Playing the devil.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on over here. No, I can't. Actually, bark, 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 bark. What's going on?
That's basically how it all went down. So, if I said any do-overs, I would say I wish that I had actual... but it is what it is, and I'm where I am, and I'm still very happy. You know, I feel like I'm right where I wanted to be. I feel very lucky.
Non-religious, but a question that I want to have you address is, how important are the arts in schools? You know, a lot of the funding for arts and stuff in schools has been taken away.
Yeah.
How important is it, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's incredibly important. I think it's so sad to me that we're losing this, because, you know, we talk about the library being the brain of the school, but the arts are the soul of it, the heart of it, you know? And I think we lose that that element of creativity. We're kind of turning out robots that are really good at math. You know, and I just, it really concerns me. You know, it bothers me that we have to work so hard in my own school, you know, and it's a great school, but we have to work hard to raise money every year to be able to pay for our art teacher. And we're lucky to have an art teacher. You know, a lot of schools don't, but we have a full-time art teacher, but we have to pay for that dude. And it's selling a lot of popcorn balls and, you know, and I just think it's backwards.
The workload for him isn't there. Is that the concern? Like, there's not enough students in his classes? Or is it just the justification
of the elementary school?
Oh, at the elementary school. Okay, yeah. I was thinking of UVU.
No. I'm talking my kids' elementary school.
Elementary school.
Yeah, okay. They have a full-time art teacher there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's not even heard of anymore, I don't think.
But we have to pay for him, and we have to scrounge that money up to get him. And it makes me sick. And so what we have to do, and parents have to be willing to do this, is parents have to step into the school and say, if it's not happening, I will do it. You know, and I did that for a couple of years. I went in and did an after-school play with the kids, and to be frank, I hated it. The kids drove me crazy. But
that's you, number four and number five.
They weren't my kids. That's the other thing, is they weren't even my kids.
Yeah,
my kids wouldn't try out. Yeah. But I wanted it to be happening, you know, because it needed to be happening. And what's been great about it is it's perpetuated, and now other people have stepped up and taken over that little program, and they've done a couple plays every year since then. I think that's awesome, but parents have to be willing to step in and make it happen if it's not happening. It's just one more thing for us to do, but if we want it to happen, we have to make it happen.
What do you think about things like the Book of Mormon musical? Obviously not written by Mormons, but it's had a huge impact on Mormon culture.
Well, I haven't seen it.
Would you see it?
Yeah, I'd see it, but I see a lot of things.
Well, no, I'm not any sort of judge. People ask me, and jury's out. I would have to know. You know, I would know that night, hey, I got tickets. And that would be the point I would make the decision, I think.
Sure.
Because I've listened to a lot of the music, and I think it's very funny.
Yeah,
and
it's
I don't listen to it and go, that offends me to my bitter core, I can't believe, and, you know, whatever. I also see it as a huge missionary tool where even, you know, I feel like I'm in agreement with the church. That's why they bought ads in the Playbill for the Book of Mormon musical, because there's value to it. But I don't know that I've resided in a... this would be my choice.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to talk about because I don't know it very well. But I think you sort of have to look at what was their end game. Was their end game just to make fun of us, or, you know, humiliate us? Or were they really trying to do something that, you know, maybe poked fun at us but had a good message to it? And I think from what I've heard, it actually is pretty kind to Mormons. It paints us as kind of dopes, but that we do a lot of good work and we do a lot of, you know, show a lot of love and kindness. And so I don't know how I feel about it, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing it.
That leads an interesting conversation. A lot of people go, oh man, I don't want to surround myself in the arts because of that greater thinking, you know, that kind of taking things beyond that, having to experience things that you maybe wouldn't experience, I guess, you know, in order to be true to self. It's like, well, I need to see this. I need to be able to experience all things as opposed to limiting myself. Do you think that that's the truth?
Yeah, I do. Well, I think that...
and then if so, is that why so many people that are involved in the arts find themselves falling away from the church?
Yeah, that's a bigger question too. I think that it's easy for us to sort of pull ourselves away from the artistic community at large, because we're afraid that there's no place for us, or that people are going to sort of make fun of us or be overtly suspicious of us. And I haven't found any of that to be true. Mm-hmm. In the places I've worked, I've worked in the UK, and I've worked in Southern California and Chicago and these places, and I've never ever ran across anyone that treated me any differently because I was LDS, and I was usually pretty upfront about it. It's hard to hide it with me when I say I'm from Utah and I say I have five kids. Well, there's two buzzers right there, you know, and so. But I think that people are much more receptive to us than we think they are, and we're so afraid that there's no place for us out there. And I kind of think there is. People have been incredibly kind and warm to me as I've worked.
And you've worked at big places. Molly mentioned this in the kind of the break that we took. Not like, you say England, but at big places in England, Steppenwolf in Chicago and in Southern California, though I don't know, I would assume it's not, Southern California community theater house on the corner. I hate to use the word legitimate as other places wouldn't be legitimate, but, reputable. I've heard of that place. Those people do some amazing, kind of pushing boundary things.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting when you go to some of these places. I went to watch things at the Globe Theatre in London and just marveled at the work that they were doing on stage and just thought this would be the most amazing thing. And then one day I was up there and thought to myself, well, it's cool, but I'm just up here doing work. We're all doing work. It's like, you go do your job at wherever, and I'm up here. I learn lines and I say them, and you know what I mean? And I think that's, I don't know. Work is work, and I don't know. I don't know what that means, but.
Do people ever, because I get this sometimes, where people go, oh yeah, but what you're doing is memorizing lines and saying them back. Like, there's like a level of, yeah, but you're not a CEO of a company. Oh, right, or
That is somehow not legitimate?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're right.
No, but you've experienced that, I would imagine.
I don't know that I can think of anyone ever saying that, but you certainly can sense it from people. And it's generally from kind of an older generation, a generation that you say what you do and they kind of look at you like, oh, that's cute. Well, how cute.
Oh, pat on your head.
You're learning some parts. You're learning them lines up there. You've done great. It's funny to me how, like, I don't act as much anymore, but I people would always say, you'd come off stage and people would say, congratulate you. And they'd say, I don't know how you learned all those lines. How did you do that? As if it was a magic trick that you could learn. And that's what you do 3 months before the show even goes up. That's like the first thing you do is get those lines out of the way. And then the real work starts. But I think for some people, that's the most daunting element of theater is learning, memorizing lines.
And then saying them back the right way. And then having to remember how to say them. Do you ever think about what you would have done otherwise? Or were you one of those people that you talk about where it's like, this is the only thing?
I think I was one of those people. Because I tried. I think in the beginning I tried. I told my wife I was going to go to law school, which I think is why she married me. Yeah. And then I switched gears on her.
Contention?
No, she was awesome. No, she was really great. I mean, to be, I was in retail. I was a manager of Barnes & Noble for four or five years.
Yeah. Of course you
were. We had a little underground secret, Molly and I.
It's true.
We had a little secret, like, underground. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I call myself, I was like the Harriet Tubman of actors, because I was the manager of Barnes & Noble, and I would secretly get all these actors jobs. They needed jobs that had flexibility so they could audition. Uh-huh. And so I was ushering all these actors through my store.
Really?
And they would come and work for 3 months and then quit, and it was the underground railroad of employment.
That's awesome.
But anyway, so I was doing they were the flakiest, worst employees ever.
I'm sure.
Ever. And they stole things and they were horrible.
Barnes & Noble's still in business.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Regardless of anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, so I was in retail and I was making a good living, and then but I was just really unhappy. Mm-hmm. And I'd heard about a program this program at Exeter. And I just got really excited about it.
Wait, is it Exeter?
Exeter. Have you heard of the University of Exeter?
No, I haven't.
It's the alma mater of J.K. Rowling.
Oh, well.
And Tom York of Radiohead.
I'm not familiar with either of these. Have they done anything significant?
Not recently. Not recently. No. She just put out like a dirty little book,
didn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can get it at Barnes & Noble.
You never know what Tom York's doing.
Yeah, you can steal it there.
Yeah. If you're an actor, you'll find a way. Well, Barnes & Noble, this is so off topic. Barnes & Noble used to have this program where you could check books out. It was like a library system because they wanted you to be able to recommend titles to customers. Mm-hmm. So when people would say, well, what's good? Which they never did. What's good? And you'd be like, well, have you read blah, blah, blah?
I'm just barely hearing of books. What book is good?
Wait, can I tell a story and you can edit it out?
Yeah, please.
Okay, this is a true story. This woman called me on the phone. An old woman, yeah. Called me on the phone.
That's my favorite story.
And she was like, yes. This is like back in 2000. What? No, maybe like 1998 or something. She's like, yes, I'm looking for a book called Harvey Porter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And I said, oh, do you mean Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban? She's like, no, it's called Harvey Porter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And I said, oh, I think you mean Harry Potter. And she's like, young man, I know what I wrote down. And it was Harvey Porter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And I said, well, let me look on my computer. So I'm like, ma'am. We have 0 copies of Harvey Porter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, but 600 copies of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. And she's like, well, I'll just try somewhere else. And she hung up. And that's who we dealt with at that store. Okay, anyway, So back. Then I quit my job. That's all I needed to say. So then I found out about Exeter, and then my wife was super cool about it. And that decision changed my life. Completely.
Taking
in every
risk.
Way possible. Taking that huge risk. I had 2 little boys at the time, and quitting that job and leaving our house, which we had bought, and moving to another country was a huge, huge thing. But of course, I've never regretted it because that changed the face of my life, you know?
What's the church like in England?
Amazing.
Like what?
Best word I've ever been in.
How come?
I don't know. Part of it is the fact that I grew up here. Mostly, and so I've never known anything other than Utah wards, and I love Utah wards, but we're very comfortable with each other, and it's mostly a neighborhood. A ward is just a neighborhood, and over there I felt like a ward is a ward, and those people, I mean, the second night we were there, someone was on our front door with food for our kids, treats for our kids, and asking what we needed, and we lived 45 minutes away from the chapel. We didn't have a car, so somebody drove 45 minutes that night to bring us this, had never met us, and I just thought, I remember feeling so lonely that first night and just thinking, like, what did I do? What have I done to this little family, you know? Mm-hmm. And my kids weren't sleeping well and my wife, you know? And I just thought, gosh, this was such a stupid thing to do. And then the very next night, someone showed up with all this stuff for us. And then we didn't have a car for a while, so people drove 45 minutes to pick us up every Sunday for church and drive us home. Never complained, never, you know, said, oh, it's your turn or anything. It was just like I experienced a church in a way I never had before. And I to this day, I just think that was the strongest word I've ever been in because the way they cared about each other and what a weird group of people in some ways. But they were all just a family, you know. There was all kinds of people in that one ward.
Have you ever had any spiritual experiences with the theater stuff that you've done?
You know, to be honest with you, I almost everything I've done has had an element of spirituality. I think that...
Share one.
That you... Well, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I direct a lot more than I act now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down at SUU. Not at SU, but I was working for the Shakespeare Festival. I directed a show for the Shakespeare Festival. It was a touring show of Macbeth. And
they're a high school tour show or whatever.
They go around. They go around the West, California and Arizona and Utah and Idaho, and
they teach about Macbeth, and then they also
and
do
the show. Uh-huh. They have a 1-hour version of the show.
What year is this?
This was like 2 years ago. Okay. It's not very long ago. And I don't know. It wasn't just one spiritual experience necessarily, but I remember feeling this really strong weight on my shoulders with this show. I needed to do it right. I needed to really nail it. And I would pray every day before rehearsal because we used to have these 9-hour rehearsals. And I would just pray, like, help me to know what to do today. And I remember as I would walk across the street from this little apartment to the theater where we were rehearsing, my brain, it was like a sponge. It would slowly sort of expand. I've never experienced that in any other show that I've done. But my brain would expand with ideas to the point where I felt like I needed to run in and just hurry and say them all because I was so excited about all these, like, ideas. And to this day, I think that was the most inspiring or inspired work that I've ever done, for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I felt more inspired on that show than any show I've ever done. It's just like inspiration coming, slings and arrows, you know, just hard and fast. It's cool.
So often in general conference, you hear the brethren quote like Shakespeare and some of these old playwrights. How come you think that is?
Because the language sounds like scriptures.
You think that's kind what it of? Is?
Probably.
I think I do, because I think that you know, there's a lot of great truths in David Mamet and Tom Stoppard and some of our modern writers, but that doesn't sound right coming from the pulpit. And so I think there's something legitimate about this classical language that had lends a weight to it.
Old but English is trusted.
Kind of, yeah. I mean,
I don't quite understand it, so it must be good.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something you can ponder on for a while, I guess.
And if you think about it, Shakespeare was written at the same time as the King James Bible. I mean, there's about 50 years difference there, so it sounds like the Bible. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful language, and there's a lot of great truths in it, and I think that's why. But Shakespeare, we've sort of, you know, this is true, that the two most what's the word, the two most
cited,
no
trusted,
no
revered.
You're not even close, because I'm talking about pioneers. The pioneers had generally two books, the Bible and the works of Shakespeare.
Okay.
Oh.
Two most common, maybe.
Yeah, I wasn't anywhere
books
close.
Among them. Pioneers were Shakespeare and the Bible, and
wonderful,
not even the Book of Mormon, because there weren't that many Book of Mormons back then. So they would read. They read the Shakespeare across the plains, you know.
And across the plains, they used to do, you know, the Old Testament, and one person would play the devil, and one person would play a chicken.
Well, somebody had to, right?
Yeah.
And it was always a love story.
Yeah, it was. It ended up being a love story.
Tonight, on the devil and the chicken.
This chicken is devilishly good.
Those pioneers, they were great, weren't they?
They really were.
Something great.
Good, happy
stories. They knew before we had any idea everything. They knew.
They got it all.
They knew.
They wrapped it all up.
They mm-hmm. they took care of that before you were even a gleam in your mother's eye. So let's talk about this. You do a web series, right? You're involved
no,
with the
I
web
don't.
Series? Your That's, wife does.
My wife does. I'm but in it. Have, I'm in it periodically. I jump in and
let's talk
create
about
problems
it.
For
let's
her.
Talk about it.
Yeah. Well, we're basically talking about my wife. She's
a, well, you don't want to talk about your wife?
Well, I do, but I get nervous because you did Zumba with her today, and uh-huh. I'm afraid you like her now. You have a crush because you keep bringing her up.
Listen, she's okay.
All right.
Stop it.
Yeah, my wife does this web series that she writes and produces with Jeff Parkin, and she's fantastic in it. She's very, very funny.
You're not selling it very well. Let's. What is it called?
It's called Pretty Darn Funny. Uh-huh. Pretty Darn Funny. Uh-huh. And it's put out through Desert
Book. It's a Desert Book.
Book
production.
Yeah.
Which I think, do you think that that's something as far as the church has advanced? Like, it seems like we've really accepted online and social media mm-hmm. where, you know, I think if social media would have come about 10 years ago, the church would have said, nope, don't be involved in that. But where Deseret Book, which is essentially the LDS Church,
yeah.
has said, hey, do this web series.
Well, how could they not? I mean, what are they going to hide out in a cave? It's this is what our life is now. This is what we do.
But you don't see, I don't, and maybe I'm ignorant to it, but I don't know that you see like
the Catholic Church.
Yeah, the Pretty Darn Funny, you know, Southern Baptist series.
Pretty Darn Baptist.
Yeah, pretty. That guy's PDB.
You know? No, I think you're right. Maybe they do, and we just don't know about it. But I think our church is actually fairly progressive in terms of technology. We always have been.
What do you think it's due from? If you had to speculate,
what do I think it's due from? I don't know. I have no idea. Probably the same thing the arts are due from. We encourage it. We encourage technology, and you know, my sons bring their iPads to church and read their scriptures off of them.
Yeah, because they even with that, you know, I mean, you think to me, I think old timey church. I think okay, well, you don't want to have distractions, and you want to have people to be able to focus on the things that are going on in church and not be angry, burdened, and stuff like that. But it seems like the church is. Probably millions of dollars invested into
yeah.
apps and, you know, all this stuff to be hands-on. It'll be fun to see
how it's just a tool for reaching people, too, mm-hmm. isn't it?
I mean,
if you're trying to reach people and people are searching for your church and you're a proselyting church, which we are, you know, you want to be able to
You have to have an online presence
yeah.
because that's, like you said, where people are.
Yeah.
See, and we're funny. It's Pretty Darn Funny. So let's get back to it. What is Pretty Darn Funny about?
It's about my wife plays this woman who is an LDS mother. they don't always push the LDS thing, but she is. It's clear that she is. Who starts a comedy troupe? It's a great sort of wheelhouse for my wife, who's very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think there's a stigma out there that Mormon women aren't that funny, or that women in general aren't funny, let alone stigma. LDS or not. Molly.
Whoa. If looks could kill. Listen, you are the funniest person I've ever met.
I'll say I'm pretty darn funny.
Yeah, pretty darn funny. So it's just a humorous look at...
Yeah.
And where do you come into play?
I'm just her husband. Oh, I honestly have about my part is so minute. I think I have two episodes in the.
I do too.
Molly, listen.
But I'm going to be huge in the second series. You watch. We're beefing me up.
We're writing me into this thing.
But
is that pretty fun to have that experience with your wife?
Yeah, it's
really
great.
Pretty artsy.
She is very much. Yeah, she's kind of a perfect person.
Yeah,
she can't play basketball, but I think she can do just about everything else. She's a painter and a singer, and yeah.
If she decided to play basketball, she'd be the best basketball player that you know.
She kind of would. And she would look really hot doing it. She'd wear full makeup and have like a...
I hope she listens to this.
She won't. You know why? Because the last thing she wants to do is sit and listen to an hour of me talk. She'd skip forward and be like, I like the part. And then she would just tell whatever part she skipped to.
Yes.
And it make it seem like she heard the whole thing.
She writes down three parts. I like the part where you said Exeter. I like the part where you guys riffed on me. I like the part. So as far as the gospel and the arts, you feel like it just kind of comes all together with how we push it. I guess I just hope that as people have listened to this, that they realize that that's something that can be done,
mm-hmm.
and that people can, they don't have to give up on dreams. Because whenever I hear that and it's like, well, that doesn't fit. Yes, it does. You can make it fit. You can make those things fit if you want it bad enough.
But that's the key to it.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we don't just say, you know, you can do anything, because that's not true. I don't think people can do anything. But I think people can do anything if they work hard.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to work hard and if they have some talent there, then absolutely there's nothing that will stop them. And that's the message we need to be giving them.
And that working in the arts is not incompatible with living the gospel.
No. No. In fact, we need more people working in the arts. We're going to raise our profile.
Right.
Well, and it's interesting, as I've talked to, I was single until I was 30, and being that kind of, you know, older 20s and being in the arts and having that appreciation and talking to other theater people being like, man, I just wish there was a ward where it was like calling all artists.
Yeah.
And artists can go to that ward and then everyone kind of gets it.
Yeah. And it would be a magical ward, but it wouldn't benefit anyone.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Because we'd all get together and be creative and we'd hug each other and cry.
We'd have the most amazing talent shows, but the
media.
Yeah, but we're not helping anybody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's nice for us to congregate and we always want to do it, but we need to diffuse. We need to go out and
spread the love.
Spread the love.
In the same way that the saints all weren't supposed to gather to Zion, but establish Zion in their own towns.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Good tie-in.
Perfect.
Spiritual.
Man.
You're amazing.
Are you guys in awe of me right now?
It's something.
She's going to remember that part.
She's going to be
and
like,
when everyone
remember
was in
the awe part?
And I'm done. I listened to your little podcast. tell us what your calling in your ward is right now.
I am the second counselor in the bishopric.
Is that cool? What are you in charge of as second counselor?
Oh, gosh.
Because don't you get an auxiliary?
I get several.
Mm-hmm.
I have primary.
Okay.
Scouts.
Uh-huh.
Finances.
Yeah.
People who complained.
Yeah. People who complained about the church.
I just feel like I always have to deal with people who complain.
Okay.
It's not necessarily my calling. Women wearing pants is a huge... I got put over that committee.
Yeah.
The pants committee.
And the no pants committee.
The rated R committee. Yeah. Like who does and who doesn't watch them. All of that stuff. I helped push Coke through.
Yeah.
Good.
So that was a big
August
project 28th. For me this
August
year.
August 28th.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
So you can thank
well
me
done.
For that. I got that through. It's lobbyist. No, really, it's just those main ones. I actually really like my calling. It's my second go around on this one.
Didn't get it right the first time.
I was first counselor. Counselor's good. It's fun because you're kind of involved. I like being involved, but it's not terribly taxing. It's just time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just time and it's fun. It's fun. I get to know people. And
what about if you could pick a calling? What calling would you pick for yourself? You can make one up too.
I think I'd be a really good prophet.
Yeah. All right. If you want to go there.
I mean, let's be honest.
I did go to Exeter.
I did. Do we have any English prophets? No, none yet. Well, how about If I could pick a calling, I would be the primary pianist.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
That would be the best calling. And I've had that calling before, but it was a long time ago.
You'd like to appreciate it
I'd
now?
Like to go back and really do it and really nail it.
What's your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part. You know, I'm a social person. I love people, and I think these things I've been talking about, you know, congregations and people coming together and different types of people coming together. That's probably my favorite part of my faith, is that is this idea of families, and not just my own family, but the fact that I have a ward family, and that there are communities of artists and communities of saints. And that's kind of my favorite part of our faith, is that I feel like we're very, you hear about people saying that they don't feel included, and I'm always a little sad about that, but I think we're trying. I think we're working on being inclusive and creating families, lots of different types of families. It's kind of my favorite part of our faith. Is that weird?
No, that's great.
Tell us, climb up on the Ramayumptum. Tell people where they can find you or get in contact with you or follow you.
Hear ye. The best way to sort of track me is through my directing projects. I direct quite a bit of shows locally.
What's coming up?
When's this coming out?
Whenever.
We may be done. Yeah. I have a show at the Hale Center Theater in West Valley. Okay. The 39 Steps is opening on December 31st, and then I'll be doing another show for them called Ragtime, which opens in June. And then I'll be doing a show for the Hale again in Orem, and that opens that's called In the Heights. Hmm. It's a musical about Latinos, so it's perfect for Orem.
Mi abuela.
Yeah, it's got a song called Mi Abuela in it, I believe.
Well, I don't know.
It doesn't.
There's not that song, but I just remember that's a focus of the musical at least a couple of
times.
It's
Mi Abuela.
Yeah, Mi Abuela. Yeah. Oh, Mi Abuela. Yeah, I saw it on Broadway.
I'm totally auditioning.
Did you like it?
I loved it.
Yeah, so I'm doing that in the fall.
It was unbelievable. How are you going to do that in White Bread, Utah?
We're going to see. I'm already getting people interested. People have been emailing me and saying, you know, I'm interested in doing this show, you know. So I think there's people come out of the woodwork.
Just do me a favor and don't try and pawn off someone who's African American.
No.
Who is clearly not African American.
Yeah, just put a little pancake makeup on. And,
or she's Asian, so that works. And it's like, no, this person has to be African American.
Exactly.
This won't work. You know, Huck Finn, the story of Huck Finn has a white guy and a black guy. It can't be a white guy and a Native
Polynesian
American
dude. Yeah. I know. No, I think we'll be okay. I'm kind of excited to do that show.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
You got your lead right here. All right. Well, we hope this...
Richie Stedman.
Starring
as the Latino.
In,
he'll be totally starring
Dominican
as Abuela.
I'm your Abuela. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
And that when the time comes, we will all travel home in safety.
And that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row
of the cultural hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.